This is the Empowered Educational Conversations with Elaine and Christina podcast. We are two educators who have worked in over 7 different school districts and want to see change. We are here for our school leaders who have the desire to implement radical changes to fight the destructive nature of racism and injustice. This is a safe space for passionate school leaders and aspiring school leaders to listen in as we voice our concerns, laugh at our mistakes, and strategize ways to overcome adversity as educators, all while keeping it real.
Join us as we share our experience along with other important voices in the field. And don't forget to follow us on social media at Elaine and Christina, where we seek to build community and support one another in this work. While you're there, share this with a friend and colleague, and rate and review this podcast so we could get this to even more school leaders who want to do this work. All right, let's get to this episode.
Welcome back to the Empowered Educational Conversations podcast with Elaine and Christina, episode 79. I'm Elaine, co-host of this podcast. I've been in education for 18 years as a former school counselor and high school assistant principal. I am currently a district counselor at a K-12 school district and assist school leader coach helping educators revolutionize the K-12 public school system. In our last podcast, Christina reflected on her past 2 years and how it has shaped her leadership practice now. So if you haven't already listened to that, make sure you go check it out. Today is another solo episode. Christina won't be with us this time, but we'll be back for our next episode. So let's jump straight into the episode. Today, I really want to talk about the recent incident that happened and has brought up conversations within our educational community, the Next Benedict incident. While I won't delve into the specifics of the incident itself, I want to focus on the lessons we can learn from and how schools can take proactive measures to prevent similar occurrences. I was at a wellness conference recently, and one of our presenters wanted to honor Next by telling their story and why it was important for them to tell, even though it felt like they come out every single time they share it. I admired that courage so much and just the effort that went into making sure to honor Next and to share something very personal about the presenter and their background. And through that process, I realized that Christina and I hadn't addressed what happened to Next Benedict and how really we haven't even talked about it on very much on our social media content or even in our podcast. So it was our time. It is our time to address it, to talk about it, and to really express how the school leaders at that school, the school that Next went to, played a major role in what happened that day, and how Christine and I have a duty to address it. And also, I want to make sure that we honor Next in our way. So really, when I think about this, obviously, this happened in a state very different than California. Christine and I are in California, born and raised in Oakland, California, and we work primarily with school leaders in the Bay Area, in the San Francisco Bay Area. So it's going to be a little bit different. And I'm trying to really understand what it would be like to work in a state that has laws that prevent you from doing, diversity, equity, inclusion work, or states that have banned books that affirm people's identities, and even places that do not respect pronouns. So I'm fully understanding that I have a bias, being that I'm from California, but I really do feel that as educators, we have a job to protect all of our students. So when thinking about what happened with Next, one crucial aspect that we must address is the need for educators to audit their own biases. Bias awareness and cultural competence training are essential components of creating an inclusive school environment. So educators must continually examine their beliefs, attitudes, and assumptions to ensure that they are not inadvertently contributing to a negative or discriminatory climate. And I mean, we still have situations like this here in California. It's everywhere. And so I just don't know what it's going to take for all educators to do this internal thought work when it comes to our position, our privilege, and the biases that we hold from what we've just been exposed to, what we've been trained to think, and what we grew up with. And so I also understand, like, there is a lot of work that's happening at the school sites and district sites around equity and inclusion, and how this might be a little more difficult for states who have outright banned DEI work or anti-DEI laws. And I know that navigating anti-DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion laws can be challenging for schools, but there are still ways to promote bias awareness, empathy, and understanding within the boundaries of those laws. And so here are some of the suggestions that I want to focus today. So the first one being on this, I guess, wordsmithing, right? But really the focus on cultural competence. So while some laws may restrict explicit discussions about certain topics such as race or gender, schools can still provide training and workshops on cultural competence. So emphasize understanding different cultural backgrounds, perspectives, and experiences without delving into sensitive or prohibited areas. And I say that because I think that as we focus and say that we're going to address cultural competence, there's also an underlying kind of expectation that we are reflecting and looking inward to understand how this shows up in our practice. The second thing being implicit bias training. So offer, and this one gets a little touchy, I understand, depending on the state that you're in and if it's a red or blue state, but offer implicit bias training that focuses on recognizing and addressing biases without specifically targeting protected characteristics. So this can include biases related to decision-making, communication styles, and perceptions of ability. So I know that oftentimes when we think about implicit bias, we're talking about privilege, we're talking about race. And this is saying that we can still work on implicit biases, but focus on other areas around like how it impacts our decision-making processes or how we communicate or shut down with others depending on our implicit bias. So the other thing, another thing that can be done even in anti-DEI states is promote inclusive language. So encourage the use of inclusive language in all school communication and interactions. Emphasize the importance of respectful and inclusive language that avoids stereotypes or assumptions about individuals or groups. And this is something that we can do at all levels. And then I think that most school leaders do. But in the situation when we're thinking about what next had endured at their school, really thinking about how we reinforce this, even under the guise of PBIS, if we are going to do that, like really talk about what it means to be to promote inclusive language and how we expect our community to be respectful and avoid any stereotypes when we're referring to others at our school campus. Next one is emphasize restorative practices. So we have seen a movement towards restorative justice. And so this is really, again, recommending that we implement restorative practices that promote empathy, active listening, and conflict resolution skills. These practices can foster a positive school climate and improve relationships among students and between students and educators. Again, it emphasizes the relationship and how to repair a relationship when harm was done. And so this isn't like when we have reached the highest level of an incident. It is like, as we see these little things occur, the I would say the things that we often want to encourage students to be upstanders. And this is one way of encouraging that behavior. Instead of being a bystander, we want you to be an upstander and wanting to center how we use restorative practices in our school to address issues that may be small to some, but mean a lot to others. Integrate social emotional learning. So all of us talking about SEL, and I know even that sometimes is under attack in certain states, but it's important that as school leaders, we look at, even in the states that are saying we cannot, how do we incorporate social emotional learning into the curriculum to develop students' empathy, self-awareness, and relationship building skills? So we need to focus on teaching empathy, perspective taking, and respectful communication. Again, all things that all students can benefit from, but definitely something that our students need to really learn so that they are not causing so much harm and potentially really impacting a student's self-worth or their own mental health. Community engagement is another area that even schools and states that have anti-DEI laws can collaborate with community organizations and leaders to support initiatives that are promoting diversity, equity, and inclusion. Engage parents and community members in discussions and activities that foster understanding and inclusivity. So really teaming up with your local organization so that it's not all having to come from the school leader or the teachers who are, you know, often volunteering to be on committees and want to lead this charge. Like, understanding that, you know, you can also team up with local community organizations. That is one way that we can bring outsiders and offer a different point of view to provide this information. Another one is peer education. And I've said this a lot recently, that I don't think that we leverage the strength that our students hold enough. So really, in teaching our students to be peer educators is empowering students to become the ones that are educating their peers on topics related to empathy, of respect, and understanding. Peer-led initiatives can be effective in promoting positive attitudes and behaviors among students. And again, it takes it where the adults don't have to be the only one reinforcing the values, the expectations to the school community, but our own students are doing that. So more than just being an upstander, also leading the charge and being the teachers to really surround the whole community around equity, inclusion, respect, safety, all the things that our students need and that I know next needed as well. Professional development. I mean, you've heard Christina and I talk about this all of the time. We need to provide ongoing professional development opportunities for educators on topics such as cultural competence, implicit bias, restorative practices, and inclusive teaching strategies. Equip educators with the knowledge and skills to create inclusive and supportive learning environments. And I know, as hard as it is, we also need to include our classified staff and those in positions of what either is called a security guard, culture keeper, school community liaison, however we refer to those that, are typically in the halls or typically the ones that have to report to an incident. They should also be included in this. And so professional development is for all of us. And it's really something that I want to see school leaders take more initiative on. Is how do we encourage all of our educators, regardless of how many years of experience they have, to regularly engage in professional development? And how do we follow up on that and have an expectation where the educators that do go to these PD opportunities come back and teach the rest of us what they've learned and how we can implement the things that they've learned? Another one came up recently too, that I've seen happen before and would like to see more, is review policies and practices. regularly review school policies and practices to ensure that they align with the principles of diversity, equity, and inclusion. Identify and address any potential barriers or biases that may exist within the school's policies or procedures. Now, this is going to be hard, again, depending on the state that you're in, but even if we were to review our dress codes, review our attendance policies, review the bathroom policies. These are all things that definitely need to be revisited and reviewed often with the lens of diversity, equity, and inclusion. One more last thing being parent education workshops. I know I see this happening more so at the lower levels, but if we can offer workshops or information sessions for parents on topics that are related to bias awareness, cultural competence, or fostering empathy at home can really extend the impact of these initiatives beyond the school environment. Even recently, we held a social media webinar, and so really to like one, educate our families, but to address how our students are being impacted by what they see on these apps really can be one way to have these conversations with our families and our community, so that yes, we're talking about social media, but we're also talking about, you know, fostering empathy, cultural competence, how, you know, self-esteem is being impacted. So again, just some of the different ways or different strategies that can be done even in states with anti-DEI laws. So again, by focusing on those strategies, schools can work towards promoting bias awareness, empathy, and understanding while navigating those anti-DEI laws and regulations. And it's essential. I get it. It is essential to approach these efforts through thoughtfully and sensitively taking into account legal constraints while prioritizing inclusivity and respect within the school community. And, you know, I definitely do not know what that's like, although I will say that even in California, there are many school leaders that have to kind of, you know, be mindful of how they're going to approach a topic or an incident on their campus to not have it be something that blows up to the point where they can no longer address it or are silenced on an issue. So not to say that, you know, everything is perfect here in California, but it's definitely not something that we are facing, you know, governors and school boards to continuously be telling us, basically telling us what we cannot talk about. Okay, so moving on, I just kind of want to wrap up with some other things that school leaders should be thinking about. So in addition to, you know, understanding and being aware of our implicit bias, promoting empathy and understanding among students is essential. So encouraging open dialogue about diversity, inclusion, and respect can help prevent misunderstandings and conflicts from escalating. We cannot just pretend we didn't hear it. We cannot pretend that we didn't see it. This not only includes our school leaders, it includes our staff, all of our staff, both certificated and classified, and it includes our students and student groups. Furthermore, the implementation of robust anti-bullying policies and procedures is crucial. And I think this is the piece that we really need to pay attention to, as this is exactly what impacted, well, not exactly, but you know, part of what impacted Next Benedict. Schools must have clear protocols in place to address bullying, harassment, and discrimination promptly and effectively. Right? This includes providing training for staff and students on recognizing and reporting inappropriate behavior. I need all of you right now to think about what are your policies for reporting these types of incidents. I know that in some school districts here nearby, they even have anonymous reporting for microaggressions. So not only can you report as a student or as a staff, can you report an incident of bullying, an incident of sexual harassment, you can also report an incident of microaggression. And it's anonymous and it gets reported to school administration, where then in that moment, someone is supposed to be checking it every single day or just have it up as a, you know, a reporting measure. And as something comes in, they have to, you know, investigate the validity and identify what has happened and what they're going to do to address it. And so that's when it's like promptly and effectively, you should have these things written out. What happens? Someone reports this. What is the next step? Who follows through? Who's the point person? And, you know, lay out all the steps so that it is out there so that people understand what happens when these things get reported. What I don't have happen is students will say, I reported this, but nothing happened. Sometimes we cannot tell a student what we investigated, but we could definitely tell them the steps that are taken. And I don't see that happening enough. Okay. Promoting digital citizenship and responsible use of technology is also essential in today's digital age. Educating students about online etiquette, or just, you know, how to navigate the online world, cyberbullying prevention, and the impact of their online actions can mitigate potential risks and negative interactions. So just as I mentioned before, having a social media webinar for families, talking about, you know, just the essentials and the values that, you know, their families can uphold through the rules around social media. But also, you know, what type of lessons do you have on digital citizenship for your students? So ask yourself that now. What do we do to teach our students about social media? How can they report incidents of cyberbullying? And how do our teachers interact with social media? Are we having them use different apps and not talk about how to protect their identity or protect themselves and their safety? So I think this is a huge one. And I think that, you know, I also want to think through how we could support our school leaders and just the people that we work with on digital citizenship. But we all know that social media is getting bigger and bigger, and a lot of conflicts really do start or continue on these apps. Okay. Collaboration with parents in the wider community is key to creating a unified approach to addressing issues and fostering a positive school climate. So building strong partnerships with parents and families and involving them in school initiatives related to safety and well-being can further strengthen our efforts. Really understanding too who our allies are and helping them, you know, having them help us be a part of this process, right? So identifying the allies, identifying the families that want to see more inclusive environments, that want us talking about these issues that their students face, so that when we do have some families that do come forward and say that this isn't appropriate or that they don't want this being addressed, that we have other parents already on our side, already helping us build these initiatives so that we have a stronger chance of having these things move forward. I just think, you know, we can really tie in those parents that are often working with us so that we can build with them together. Okay, lastly, creating a culture of accountability and transparency within the school community is crucial. Students, staff, and parents should feel empowered to speak up about concerns and trust that their voice will be heard and addressed appropriately. That goes back to your reporting systems. That goes back to your admin team and making sure that you are transparent and often communicating about these things that are coming up and be very clear on who follows up and when. So that, again, it isn't based on who's the person coming and following up on a certain issue. It's that every single issue gets handled in the same way because there's a protocol and we are following through every single time. By proactively addressing bias, promoting empathy, implementing these robust policies, and fostering collaboration, we can work towards preventing incidents like the next Benedict incident. And obviously, I know that there's a lot that goes into what occurred that day. And again, I'm not here to talk about the incident because I just think that could definitely be researched and read about articles. I'm really here to say that I do not want that to happen to another student, that I want next their, you know, their story, their life to be, honored in a way that we prevent this from ever happening again. I want us to create safer, more inclusive school environments for everyone. And I think now, especially, I want us to, like, at the basic level, respect pronouns, but really we need to go beyond that and not just, you know, say, oh, but we, you know, we have students use their preferred pronouns. No, there's other things that we need to make sure is happening to keep our students safe. Thank you for tuning into this episode. I know there's a lot more we could talk about, but I wanted to get something out and offer some strategies that our school leaders can really think about, policies that we need to audit, and maybe some questions that you need to ask of yourself when it comes to how you would have handled the incident that occurred to Next Benedict had it been your student or your school. So, I mean, together, I know we can make a positive impact on our schools and communities and really protect our students, all of our students. So thank you. Until next time, enjoy. And I wish you all a good spring break because I think it's about that time. So take care, everyone. See y'all next time.
We hope you enjoyed this conversation. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Empowered Conversations Pod. Check out our content and engage in a conversation with us through the comments or DMs.
Also, please help us grow and share this with your friends, colleagues, as well as post on your social media. We look forward to next time. Take it easy.